Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce cost and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR, into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/strange. 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 Hey, strangers. We're going on vacation, so we thought it would be fun to leave you with some extra listening material in case you're traveling too. One of our older premium episodes, released in full on the main feed. You can find 50 other premium episodes, with 2 new episodes released every month on Patreon or Apple Podcasts Premium. On Patreon, you also get an ad-free feed of our regular episodes, plus access to fun giveaways and blogs and occasional live streams. We hope you enjoy this episode about a fascinating, if little-known, attempt to prevent disaster in the United Kingdom, the Premonitions Bureau.
Looking for creepy stories? Then we might have a podcast for you.
And now, presenting Rattled and Shook.
Rattled and Shook is a weekly podcast that features new scary stories every episode, kind of like this.
I would hear her say things to me inside my head.
I couldn't get around him. I was trapped.
The other guy started to get pretty agitated. He grabbed my grandfather's oxygen hose and he cut off his oxygen.
Then I started thinking, well, you know, who would be hanging around in this nowhere forest, in this nowhere area? And that's when I started looking more closely. And that's when I noticed there were several shapes. And they were slowly working their way toward me as they were moving from tree to tree.
New episodes of Rattled and Shook are out every Thursday. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Richard Serrett. Join me on Strange Planet for in-depth conversations with the world's top paranormal investigators, alien abductees, Bigfoot trackers, monster hunters, time travelers, alternative archaeologists, remote viewers, and more.
As I was on the way to Area 51, I was stopping on the side of the road and just taking measurements, and I found this one spot where time slowed down by a fraction of a second. It's not supposed to do that.
From the two big categories, animal mutilations and human abductions, you have to conclude that genetic material is being harvested.
Well, I reached for a rifle and I turned and looked, and it was already moving away, and it was descending the bluff. There's no way any human could have went down it. It was probably a 75 degree angle straight down almost.
On Richard Serrett's Strange Planet, we're redefining reality. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Do not go any further. Turn around. Go home.
Just a note before we get started. This episode, while not graphic, does discuss quite a bit of death, though not in detail. In any case, listener discretion is advised. And another small note. I'm getting over an endless cold, so I do apologize for the hoarseness. I'm Laura Norton, and this is One Strange Thing, the show where we search the nation's news archives for stories that can't quite be explained. Most of us have heard this advice at some point in our lives. If you see any numbers in your dreams, you better write them down. It might well be a prediction. Your chance at a winning lottery ticket, perhaps. The idea of seeing the future in dreams is, of course, an ancient concept. It seems like people have always been looking for ways to add a little more structure to the chaos of life. Charms, spells, palm reading, tarot, even astrology fill a similar niche, like believing in karma, or that weather in Atlanta can be predicted. It's all about making us feel in control when we're all so incredibly not. So, with that in mind, even the most skeptical among us might just write down numbers from our dreams. You know, just in case. If you've had an instance of those dream numbers actually popping up in real life, do drop us a line, because content needs creating after all. But let's move beyond the stuff that can realistically be chalked up to coincidence. Because there really are cases of people who've predicted the future through their dreams, and not just one or two cases. In fact, there was once a doctor who was so interested in the possibility of premonitions that he spent the last half of his career studying them. This man was named Dr. John Barker, and Dr. John Barker was eventually responsible for creating something called the Central Premonitions Registry in London, or more simply known as the Premonitions Bureau. But before we tell you about that, we need to tackle his origin story. Now, there's only one source for this information, really, so we're going to be leaning heavily on the New Yorker for the next bit of history. Dr. Barker was a psychiatrist who worked to modernize mental health hospitals in Britain during the 1950s. Barker's work was influential enough that he was invited to present on mental health legislation in front of the British Ministry of Health. So, he was a well-respected man. But Dr. Barker also had a skeptical but persistent interest in the supernatural. The same New Yorker article tells us that Barker went ghost hunting several times during his youth and even wrote about one of these experiences in his medical school's newspaper. He was also a member of Britain's Society for Psychical Research, which we imagine to be the most polite paranormal institute in existence. But once he received his doctorate, Dr. Barker became a lot less public about his interest in the supernatural. Which is understandable. We imagine that Dr. Barker had the view that, well, psychics and medicine just don't go together. That was, at least, until Dr. Barker found something that changed his mind. Per the Times, around 1965, Dr. Barker read about the case of a woman who died, for all intents and purposes, of fear. In her youth, this woman had been told by a psychic that she would die at age 43. A week after her 43rd birthday, she happened to undergo a minor surgery to help with incontinence. Unbeknownst to her surgeons, this woman was convinced that she would die during her surgery, and she said so beforehand to both her sister and a nurse at the hospital. And in some ways, she was right. She did die shortly after surgery, but not from the operation itself. Rather, she died from what the New Yorker calls, quote, an adrenal hemorrhage, a rare failure of the adrenal glands. Now, we're no doctors, but we know that the adrenal glands are responsible for your body's response to stress, specifically with that little hormone called adrenaline. Something happened to this woman, possibly related to the psychic's prediction and her lifelong fear of impending death. Something that, as far as we can see, maybe shouldn't have happened. The doctors who published her cases had difficulty explaining her precise cause of death. As for Dr. Barker, well, per the same New Yorker article, he believed that two of his previous patients may have died of similar circumstances. And he believed that all three cases could only be explained by looking to the great beyond. You see, though he'd kept it quiet for a while, Dr. Barker had never really lost his desire to believe. And this case was the perfect means to explore that belief, because it was, well, unbelievable. This woman's case inspired Dr. Barker to write a book about the link between fear and death, called Scared to Death. Per Goodreads, the front cover of the book explains it as, quote, a medical doctor's amazing, fully documented case history of deaths caused by strange and terrifying psychic powers. And here, too, was the beginning of the Premonitions Bureau, though Dr. Barker didn't know it at the time. You see, strangers, it was while researching his book that Dr. Barker visited a remote Welsh village called Abervan. In the span of one morning, Abervan had gone from a place most of Europe had never heard of to the center of every news cycle. Per the Gazette, on October 20th, 1966, there was a disaster in Abervan that killed 144 people, most of whom were children. Abervan was a coal mining village, which meant it had to store all of the byproduct created from excavating mine shafts. That rubble was typically stored in massive piles that were called coal tips. Through a combination of negligence and unusually high rainfall, one of the coal tips became saturated with water and began to liquefy. Per the same Gazette article, at 9:15 a.m. on October 20th, the saturation reached a breaking point. The tip turned into a slurry that collapsed down the mountain and buried parts of the village below. What did Dr. Barker have to do with all of this? Well, per the Pantograph, he'd heard stories about a child who had escaped the disaster without injury, but who died of fright as soon as he was clear of it. Except, while tracking down information about this child, Dr. Barker heard a story about a very different child. Per the Gazette, there was supposedly a 10-year-old girl living in Abervan who'd had a terrifying dream. She told her mother, "You must listen. I dreamt I went to school and there was no school there. Something black had come down over all of it." The very next day, the black coal slurry collapsed onto Abervan. Is it possible that this girl had predicted the future? Did she somehow see the disaster that was about to happen? Per that same Gazette article, a week after the disaster, Dr. Barker took it upon himself to investigate if other people had similar dreams or visions. He published a request for premonitions of the Abervan disaster in the London Evening Standard. And per the Birmingham Post, readers sent in 147 responses. That's 147 people who said they'd had dreams or visions of the Abervan disaster before it happened. Of those, 22 were corroborated by witnesses who'd heard about the dreams well before the news coverage of Abervan broke. Of course, there's always the chance that friends and family lied or misremembered information, and nightmares do happen all the time. Who's to say that these 22 premonitions weren't just conveniently disaster-themed nightmares? Well, that could be the case. Except the dreams Dr. Barker recorded were pretty specific. Like this one, which we found in the Gazette. Quote, "Frightening dream of children standing by building below a black mountain. Hundreds of black horses then thunder down the hillside, dragging hearses." Other premonitions were simultaneously more and less specific. Like this one from the New Yorker. Quote, "A 63-year-old man from Bacup in Lancashire had dreamed that he was trying to buy a book. He faced a large machine with buttons, which he thought might be a computer. White letters spelled Abervan on the screen, a word he'd not heard before. This man had literally seen the name of the disaster site spelled out in front of him. Except, the rest of his dream didn't indicate the tragedy, not like the horses with the hearses on a hillside. If only there had been a way to connect these pieces of information before the tragedy occurred. If only there was a way to establish some sort of warning system, some way of harnessing these glimpses into the future. At least, that's what Dr. Barker was thinking. Per the Gazette, after collecting the Abervan premonitions, Dr. Barker published a recommendation in the London Evening Standard. He said that the public should be invited to report their premonitions to a central bureau, perhaps linked with a computer to detect peaks or patterns in the incoming material. An official early warning could then be issued if the place, date, or nature of an impending disaster became clear. So, almost like an earthquake warning system, but for any kind of disaster, and with detection based on dreams, not tremors. So, not really like an earthquake warning system at all, but you get the idea. Thus, on January 4th, 1967, the Premonitions Bureau was born. Per the New Yorker, Dr. Barker said that if only one major catastrophe could be shown to have been prevented by this means, the project would have more than justified itself, perhaps for all time. Now, strangers, we'll be honest. The name Premonitions Bureau sounds awfully official, maybe even reminiscent of one Federal Bureau of Investigation. Let us be crystal clear, though. The Premonitions Bureau was not a government project. In fact, per the New Yorker, the Bureau was entirely run through the London Evening Standard by Dr. Barker, a reporter, and the editor of the newspaper at the time. We're not even sure if they had an official office. But that didn't seem to matter, because people certainly believed in them. According to the New Yorker, Dr. Barker received over 469 predictions in the first year. The dreams were about everything from general feelings of doom to incredibly specific predictions about plane crash fatalities. We'll get to that one in a bit. But first, we'll tell you about the scoring system Dr. Barker and his two colleagues devised, because, of course, they wanted to be slightly scientific about their system of soothsayers. Per the New Yorker, they decided that premonitions could get, quote, 5 points for unusualness, 5 points for accuracy, and 1 point for timing. Although we could not find a breakdown for what these categories actually meant, we gave it our best shot in interpreting them based on the premonitions that ranked highly. In our opinion, unusualness probably related to how unique the dream was. For example, a dream about the ground shaking would get no points for unusualness. It's too vague and easily faked. Earthquakes happen everywhere, all the time. But how about a dream about one of Queen Elizabeth's corgis having, a leg operation? Now, you must admit, that is unusual. And according to the Liverpool Echo, it was an actual premonition that the Bureau received, one which somehow proved to be true. A different article in the Evening Standard confirms that one of the Queen's corgis, named Heather, had a leg removed in 1969 because of, and we quote, a rough and tumble with her colleagues. But back to the categories. Now, we imagine that accuracy means exactly what you'd expect. If someone's dream included details like the type of disaster, a city name, or a date and time, and these things correlated to an actual event, then the premonition would get 5 points for accuracy. And lastly, timing. This one, strangers, we're not so sure about. Our best guess is that there was probably a range of time after a premonition, say 2 weeks, where the Bureau would scan the news for corresponding events. If an event happened within the range, then perhaps the premonition would be considered timely. Of course, there's the chance that if a premonition came in too close to a corresponding event, then it would receive no points. After all, a warning system that doesn't leave time for preparation isn't a very good warning system. But again, these are just guesses. With the Bureau established, readers of the London Evening Standard begin calling or mailing with their visions. Dr. Barker dutifully read them and, per the New Yorker, often congratulated the people who predicted events correctly. Because yes, people did in fact predict the future. Or, at least, they seemed to. Per the Pantograph and the Des Moines Register, there were two people who consistently sent high-scoring premonitions to the Bureau, Alan Hincher and Lorna Middleton. During the first year of the Bureau's operation, Alan Hincher accurately predicted two separate plane crashes. According to the New Yorker, the first of his predictions arrived in March of 1967, just 2 months after the Bureau was established. At 6 a.m., Hincher called Dr. Barker and warned him that a plane would crash, quote, over mountains, and that 124 people would die. Although the location, over mountains, isn't very helpful, a different description of the dream in the pantograph adds that Hincher described the crash site as a mountainous, quote, island with Grecian-type statues around a church. And just a month later, the Birmingham Evening Mail reported that 124 people died when a Britannia airliner was struck by lightning and crashed outside of Nicosia, Cyprus. For context, Encyclopedia Britannica situates Nicosia between two large mountain ranges and states that the island republic has both Greek and Turkish roots. According to the pantograph, in August of 1967, Alan Hincher made another prediction. He described an incredibly vivid dream in which he flew in a plane across Spain and over an ocean, but ran into a storm off the English coast. One of the plane's engines exploded, causing it to clip a hill and crash. 3 weeks later, this exact scenario played out. The plane crashed outside of London. Although both of Hincher's predictions had to do with airplanes, the predictions the Bureau received covered every kind of disaster that you could imagine. According to the same pantograph article, Lorna Middleton accurately predicted train collisions, fires, riots, and even the disappearance of Australia's Prime Minister in December of 1967. In another one of her conversations with the Bureau that same year, she said, "Someone is going to the moon. He's terrified. He's burning." The next day, Vladimir Komarov, a Soviet cosmonaut, died during a test flight of the Soyuz-1 spacecraft. Now, we must say, that last premonition was not 100% accurate. Per the NASA Space Science Data Coordinated Archive, the craft wasn't actually going to the moon. It did several orbits around Earth before returning to our atmosphere. And although the craft was destroyed, it wasn't because of fire. Instead, it was the parachute system that failed. Without the parachutes to slow it down to a safe speed, the craft was pulled apart in the air. It's entirely possible that Middleton somehow knew that the Soviet Union would be conducting a test flight soon, and that she could have guessed both that there would be an accident and the gender of the cosmonaut. At that point, they were all men. Of course, Hincher and his plane crash predictions could have also been informed and lucky guesses. That's the problem with premonitions. If you hear about the future, it's hard not to look for patterns in the headlines. And yet, both Hincher and Middleton were consistent. They were right 10 too many times for sheer coincidence and guesswork. According to The New Yorker, Middleton dreamed about the assassination of Senator Robert Kennedy for months before his death. She sent multiple warnings, even calling the Bureau three times the day before he was shot. If she was faking it, why the insistence on that day of all days? Enough people were inspired by Hincher and Middleton's predictions and the work of the Bureau in general that two other premonitions bureaus opened. Per the pantograph, the Central Premonitions Registry opened in New York in June 1968. And according to the Gazette, the Toronto Premonitions Bureau was opened in 1971. They worked under the same model as Dr. Barker. They collected premonitions from across the country and worked to establish an early warning system for disasters. Both of these bureaus experienced the same mixed bag of success and failures as Dr. Barker. The accurate premonitions were few and far between, but they were just as stunning and unexplainable. In terms of Dr. Barker's research, all signs looked hopeful. Dr. Barker seemed closer than ever to expanding the world's view of premonitions. Maybe psychics and soothsayers weren't actually con artists. Maybe there really were people who could see the future. And if so, could we do something to prevent terrible disasters like Abervan? Well, most signs were hopeful, except for one strange thing. Or, depending on your worldview, perhaps it's not so strange. But whether you're a believer or a non-believer, or maybe somewhere in between, perhaps it seems that, at least once, the Bureau should have struck gold. But no matter the amazing information that Dr. Barker received, he was never able to actually prevent a disaster. In fact, as far as our research shows, none of the premonitions bureaus ever did. We've said before, the problem with premonitions is that they're just vague enough to seem accurate when compared with actual events, and that can make them seem eerily true. But in this case, the devil is in the comparison. The bureaus were only able to match premonitions with events retroactively. Most of the time, the premonitions just didn't have enough detail to be practical, or the bureaus didn't have the proper channels to act on them, or there wasn't a clear way to prevent the disaster at all. That was the case for the premonitions that Dr. Barker received about his own death. Per the pantograph in 1968, both Hincher and Middleton warned the doctor that he would die suddenly and soon. Hincher specifically said that Dr. Barker would die in Yockleton, the village where he lived. Per the New Yorker, Dr. Barker wrote about the experience in a memo. He said, "Having recently written a book on people who were scared to death, I am perhaps beginning to feel what this would be like." He hadn't received a specific warning, like, stay away from the intersection for the next 2 weeks. No, he just received that portent of doom. And really, what are you supposed to do with that? In the end, he wrote down his fears and told them to some of his loved ones, and that was all he could do. According to the pantograph, in August of 1968, just a year after the bureau opened, Dr. Barker died suddenly of a stroke. He died in Yockleton, just like Hincher had said. Dr. Barker had a little information. If only he'd gotten a little more. After the doctor's death, the Liverpool Echo reported that the Premonitions Bureau continued operating. However, their model of operations changed. The new head of the Bureau, a woman named Jennifer Preston, switched to collecting premonitions from just the top six scorers, which included Middleton and Hincher. They predicted things like the injury of the former Prime Minister, Harold Wilson, and a lion attack at a game reserve. Apparently, Britain was an eventful place in the late 1960s. According to the Evening Post, the new director, Jennifer Preston, said that she would only act on a premonition if three separate people sent in the same prediction. It was the safest way to avoid inaccurate premonitions. Unfortunately, she never received a matching trio. Per KCRW, their overall success rate was only around 3%, but that's still 3% more than anyone ever expected. Although it's unclear when, exactly, the British Premonitions Bureau dissolved, the last article we found about Jessica Preston's bureau was published by the Evening Post in 1973. So, when it comes to premonitions, if you have a dream with numbers in it, should you write them down? Well, if the Premonitions Bureau is anything to go by, absolutely. There's always a chance, even if that chance is only 3%, that you're one of the rare few who can glimpse into the future. Either that, or maybe you'll just get really, really lucky. If so, please buy a lottery ticket. And then be sure to make a generous donation to your favorite podcast. We hope you'll join us next time for another premium exclusive episode of One Strange Thing. Oh, and if you wouldn't mind, take a moment to rate and review our podcast on your favorite podcast app. It helps us find more listeners.